this is VOA 1, The Hits. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, the trial of Myanmar's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi began on Monday. She faces several corruption-related charges. Many observers say the trial is an attempt by the country's military to remove her as a political force and strengthen its power. Myanmar had been making slow progress toward democracy in recent years. But a February coup prevented lawmakers from Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party from taking office following last year's victory. The rights organization Human Rights Watch said the charges being heard in a special court in Myanmar's capital are bogus and politically motivated. Phil Robertson is the Deputy Asia Director for Human Rights Watch. He said the trial is aimed at preventing Suu Kyi and her National League for Democracy Party from becoming a force that can challenge military rule in the future. The military seized power on February 1st before the new lawmakers could be seated. Soon after, they arrested Suu Kyi, along with President Win Myint and other members of her government and ruling party. The military claimed the coup was necessary because the government failed to correctly investigate accusations of voting fraud. Since then, the military has said it has found evidence of fraud. But the independent Asian Network for Free Elections and other organizations dispute that claim. Military officials have threatened to break up the National League for Democracy. And if Suu Kyi is found guilty on any charges, she could be banned from politics. The military government has claimed it will hold new elections within the next year or two. But the country's military has a long history of promising elections and then not following through. The military ruled Myanmar for 50 years after a coup in 1962. Suu Kyi was kept under house arrest for 15 years after a failed 1988 uprising. The military's latest takeover set off nationwide protests that continue despite clashes that have killed hundreds of people. Street demonstrations have become smaller recently. But the military now faces armed resistance by some opponents in both cities and rural areas. Suu Kyi's lawyers spoke about her charges Sunday. They said she has been charged with illegally importing walkie-talkie radios and using the devices without registration. She is also charged with spreading information that could cause public alarm or unrest. In addition, Suu Kyi faces two counts of violating the Natural Disaster Management Law for supposedly breaking pandemic restrictions during the 2020 election campaign. All these charges should be dropped, resulting in her immediate and unconditional release, said Human Rights Watch's Robertson. But he added that there is little likelihood Suu Kyi will receive a fair trial. Government lawyers will have until June 28th to finish their presentation. Then, Suu Kyi's defense team will have until July 26th to present its case, the team's senior member said last week. Court hearings are to be held on Monday and Tuesday each week. Two other more serious charges against Suu Kyi are being handled separately. One charge is for violating Myanmar's Official Secrets Act, which carries a prison term of up to 14 years. The other charge is for bribery, which carries a prison term of up to 15 years and a fine. Suu Kyi faced her first charge just days after the February coup. However, she was not permitted to meet with her lawyers face-to-face until a pre-trial hearing on May 24th. She was also able to briefly meet with them one other time before seeing them in court Monday.
American vaccine maker Novavax says a large study found its COVID-19 shot is 90% effective against the coronavirus and several virus variants. The results, announced Monday, were based on late-stage trials involving nearly 30,000 volunteers in the United States and Mexico. Novavax said the two-shot vaccine was about 90% effective and data showed it was safe. The company says it plans to seek emergency approval for the vaccine in the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere by the end of September. It estimates it would then be able to start producing up to 100 million injections a month. The company says it aims to supply 110 million doses to the U.S. over the next year and a total of 1.1 billion doses to developing countries. The vaccine, which is easy to store and transport, is expected to play an important part in increasing the availability of shots in the developing world. Many of our first doses will go to low- and middle-income countries, and that was the goal to begin with, Novavax chief executive Stanley Erck told the Associated Press. While more than half of the U.S. population has had at least one vaccine injection, less than 1% of people in the developing world have had one shot, researcher Our World in Data reports. The Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines have already been approved for emergency use in the U.S. and Europe. Europe also uses a vaccine developed by AstraZeneca. Novavax's study involved nearly 30,000 people ages 18 and up. Two-thirds of subjects received two injections of the vaccine 3 weeks apart, with the rest receiving an inactive substance or placebo. there were 77 cases of COVID-19, 14 in the group that got the vaccine, and the rest in volunteers who received the placebo. None of the people in the vaccine group experienced moderate or severe disease. The vaccine was similarly effective against several variants. One of the variants first appeared in Britain and is also found in the U.S. It has especially been affecting high-risk populations, including older people and those with other health problems. Only minor side effects were reported in people taking part in the study, such as head and muscle aches, tiredness, and pain at the injection site. The company said there were no reports of unusual blood clots or heart problems. Novavax reported its results in a news release. It said it plans to publish the findings in a medical publication to be examined by independent experts. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. U.S. government health officials have approved the first new drug for Alzheimer's disease in nearly 20 years. However, independent experts say the treatment has not been shown to help slow the brain disease, reported the Associated Press. Last week, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved the drug called aducanumab. It was developed by the biotechnology company Biogen in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The drug will be sold under the name Aduhelm. Biogen's stock value increased by 38% on the day of the FDA approval. The approval is based on results showing that the drug seemed reasonably likely to help Alzheimer's patients. It is the only treatment that U.S. regulators have said can treat the disease, rather than its resulting conditions or symptoms. However, Reuters news agency reported last week that two members of a group of advisors to the FDA have resigned in protest. Dr. David Knopman and Dr. Joel Perlmutter said they strongly disagreed with the FDA's decision to approve Aduhelm for treatment of Alzheimer's. The decision to approve the drug could affect millions of Americans. It is likely to cause debate among doctors and researchers. The approval may also affect standards used to judge experimental treatments, including those that seem to help patients only a little. How to judge treatments of difficult conditions is the subject of debate. Groups representing Alzheimer's patients and their families say any new treatment should be approved. But many experts warn that approving the drug could be a bad model and would open the door to poor treatments. Dr. Caleb Alexander was one of the FDA advisors who warned against the drug's approval. The Associated Press reports that he said he was surprised and disappointed by the decision. Alexander is a medical researcher at Johns Hopkins University. He said the FDA gets the respect that it does because it has regulatory standards that are based on firm evidence. In this case, he said, he thought the agency approved the drug without enough evidence. The World Health Organization estimates that 50 million people around the world have dementia. Alzheimer's disease might be the cause of 60 to 70% of those cases. Alzheimer's slowly attacks areas of the brain needed for memory, reasoning, communication, and basic daily tasks. Researchers do not fully understand what causes Alzheimer's. But there is agreement among some researchers that brain plaque may be one cause. Aducanumab helps clear a protein called beta amyloid from the brain. Other experimental drugs have done that, but they did not help patients' ability to think, care for themselves, or live independently. Dr. Patrizia Cavazzoni is the FDA's top drug regulator. She said there are uncertainties about the drug. But Cavazzoni added that the drug's ability to reduce harmful plaque in the brain is expected to slow dementia. The data supports patients and caregivers having the choice to use this drug, Cavazzoni told reporters. Before joining the FDA, Cavazzoni worked in the drug industry for several years and held high positions in clinical development, regulatory affairs, and safety risk management for several large drug companies. Under the terms of approval, the FDA requires an additional study to see if the drug is working. If the study fails to show effectiveness, the FDA could withdraw the drug from the market. However, the agency rarely does this. Biogen said it aims to complete the study required by the FDA by 2030. Biogen stopped two studies in 2019 after disappointing results. The studies suggested that aducanumab would not meet its goal of slowing the loss of mental abilities in Alzheimer's patients. Several months later, the company announced that one of the earlier studies appeared to show that the drug was effective in higher amounts. However, the change raised questions among many experts, including those working for the FDA. Biogen said about 900 U.S. medical centers are ready to begin using the drug, and more are expected to do so in the coming months. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Pierce, the 14th President of the United States. He took office in 1853 at age 48. At that time, he was the youngest person elected to the White House. Pierce was known for being social and for his good looks. But his personal life was full of tragedy, and he was not an effective chief executive. Over time, he has come to be remembered as one of the country's worst presidents. Franklin Pierce was born in the northern state of New Hampshire. He was one of eight children. He attended school regularly as a child, and he went on to Bowdoin College in Maine. There, he developed his skills as an excellent public speaker. He also became an able lawyer. Pierce's abilities carried him far, but his personal connections helped too. His father became the governor of New Hampshire. Shortly after, Pierce was elected to the state legislature. He soon became a member of the U.S. Congress, first as a member of the House of Representatives, and then as a senator. Several important things happened in Pierce's personal life during those years in Washington, D.C. He married Jane Means Appleton. They soon had a son, but the child died after only 3 days. The couple went on to have two more boys. In Washington, Franklin Pierce also developed friendships with many people from the South. They defended the right of states to permit slavery. Although he was from the North, Pierce came to share the opinions of his Southern friends. He grew to dislike anti-slavery activists, who were known as abolitionists. As a politician, Pierce was a member of the Democratic Party and strongly supported the ideas of President Andrew Jackson. But politics did not appeal to his wife. She also did not like her husband's habit of drinking alcohol with his friends. Jane Pierce belonged to the temperance movement, which urged Americans to avoid the use of alcoholic drinks. So Pierce resigned his job in the Senate and moved back to New Hampshire. There, he stopped drinking alcohol and earned fame as a lawyer and public speaker. But tragedy struck again. His second son became sick and died. Pierce remained active in politics in New Hampshire. He helped the Democratic candidate for president at the time, James K. Polk, win votes in the state. When Polk entered the White House, he gave Pierce a position as a general in the Mexican-American War. Pierce did not earn the respect of his troops. In one battle, he passed out after he fell off his horse and crushed his leg. Some of his men, seeing what happened, fled the battlefield. Others called him Fainting Frank. Although Pierce had his critics, he returned to New Hampshire as a leader in the state's Democratic Party. Yet no one expected him to become President of the United States. Pierce's nomination came during the Democratic National Convention in 1852. Party leaders could not agree on a candidate. They were split among the three top choices. So the party turned to Pierce. They liked the fact that he was not well known or had taken any strong positions as a lawmaker. As a result, fewer people could object to him, they reasoned. Pierce did very little during the election campaign. He did not need to. Many voters, especially in the South, did not like his opponent. When the election was held, Pierce won easily. But before he took office, another terrible thing happened. Franklin and Jane Pierce were traveling by train with their youngest son, Benjamin, who was 11 years old. The train went off the rails. Benny was killed instantly in front of his parents. Neither Franklin nor Jane Pierce ever really recovered. Jane believed their son's death was a punishment from God for her husband becoming president. As president, Pierce faced an extremely difficult situation. The country's ongoing dispute about whether and where to permit slavery was becoming more intense. Under Pierce, the dispute centered on the areas of Kansas and Nebraska. At the time, both areas were considered territories, not states. And each territory was above the line of the Missouri Compromise of 1820. That act, approved by lawmakers nearly 35 years before Pierce took office, banned slavery in northern areas, including what would become Kansas and Nebraska. But pro-slavery settlers demanded that Kansas and Nebraska voters, a group comprised of white men, decide the issue for themselves. A majority of U.S. lawmakers agreed. Under pressure, President Pierce signed the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. The measure was one of the most important in U.S. history. It overturned the Missouri Compromise and canceled the ban on slavery. It incited years of intense violence between pro-slavery and anti-slavery activists, and it pushed a divided nation even further apart. The Troubles also showed Pierce to be an ineffective president. He could not ease the tensions over slavery nor unite the country behind the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And he delayed using his power to stop the violence in Kansas until it was far too late. Finally, his sympathy for pro-slavery groups angered many in the North, including people in his own party. The Democrats did not nominate him again at the next election. After 4 years as president, Pierce returned to New Hampshire. He rarely socialized and began drinking alcohol again. After his wife died in 1863, Pierce seemed to disappear from public life. Americans heard little about him until his death in 1869. But he lived to see the ultimate tragedy of the Civil War, that he, like other presidents before him, had failed to prevent. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.